Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Grootniblink. I am the creator of Apples and Genos and the originator of the Zero G Draft Strategy. And in this podcast, I am going to go over the most puzzling players league-wide as submitted by the Apples and Genos Discord server. Let's hit it. All right, welcome in, everybody. We got Matthew saying that he's looking forward to another great podcast already in the chat. I do apologize. This is starting later than I intended. It's been a bit of an evening. At the risk of sharing too much information, both my children decided that they wanted to do their business outside of the normal avenues, and so we've had an evening. Let's just leave it at that for now. Toronto Dave's Indy here, #0G. Good to see you, buddy. As everybody filters in, I am still in the process of updating the sheet, making sure that I get to everybody that was asked for. We did have lots of responses, lots of people that the Apples and Genos Discord server are very interested in hearing about, so I am going to keep populating them in here. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see what I'm up to, who we're going to be talking about here. I am going to have to keep it short, unfortunately, because there's still more to be done tonight, unfortunately, around here, but we're definitely going to get at the very least into the top players here that everybody is the most interested in talking about. And I think these top five are definitely going to start us off with a bang. And we've got some more as well that it looked like, yeah, we're getting, I mean, we usually get, you know, a few double digit thumbs up, but we've got 3, 4, 5 double digit thumbs up. So people are really interested in these top players here that we're going to be talking about in just a minute. So that's pretty exciting stuff. All right. I got a few in here. I think we're ready to go. We got 10 people in the chat already. Let's ride. Let's talk about Arturi Lehkonen, shall we? So Arturi Lehkonen, Blake and I have been back and forth on Lehkonen a little bit and what we think rest of season. I've been saying, like, there's a pretty good chance that he plays on the top line, on the top power play for a good chunk at least of the season. But there's also a pretty good chance that they move stuff around. And the latest lines that I'm seeing coming out of Colorado as of today, as of 11:30 this morning, is that Lehkonen was back on the third line with Olofsson and Parise. So that's not ideal. It sounds like McKinnon's going to be back, so it's not just that McKinnon wasn't going to be back, so they were trying to spread out some stuff. Nope, it sounds like McKinnon's going to be back, but it's Drouin back on the top line with McKinnon and Rantanen in the latest lines. So where does that leave Lehkonen? I mean, I don't have any better news on power play at the moment, so he could still be on the top power play, and that could be worth it alone in terms of rostering Lehkonen, but you are going to have to put up with some up and down in terms of Lehkonen's deployment if you are going to keep hanging on to him for the rest of the season. In my mind, he's just like, he's on that borderline, right, between like a really, really good streamer and somebody that you want to hold rest of the season, because when he is getting that top line, top power play kind of deployment, that can be really, really interesting for fantasy purposes. But when he's not, he might not be super relevant. You can see in the 5 games since he's returned, he's only 270th in the league in shots per 60, 254th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. On ice numbers, not much better. Some of that, obviously, he was playing down the lineup, so maybe to be expected. But regardless, he's not exactly blown the doors off in his return to the Colorado lineup. So Lehkonen is not a guy that I think, you know, and by merit of his own talent, you have to be rostering. He's definitely more of a guy who's dependent on his surroundings and on exposure to the top Avalanche players. And so, yeah, I kind of do just view him as a really good streamer, one that you'd maybe hold on to for a few games, even if he's not getting that deployment, in the hopes that he will get that deployment later on. As we mentioned, Bednar really likes to change up the lines and move stuff around, so there's every chance that, even these lines are changed in the next couple of days or in the next couple of games. So I'm not by any means discounting Lehkonen. I think there's a pretty good chance he gets on a hot streak at some point, just as Drouin did earlier on. And he gets on the top line, top power play, gets on the hot streak, and he holds on to that for a good stretch of like 10 to 15 games. And yeah, you're going to want to roster him for those games. But there's also probably going to be a solid stretch somewhere in there where you're not going to want to be rostering him. So, it is going to end up being a little bit lineup dependent, your roster dependent on what you want to do with Lehkonen, but I definitely don't think that this is a guy who's going to make or break your season. Matthew's asking why the drop in ownership on Nyquist in Nashville. I believe that is because he was moved off the top power play in the latest line. So I'm going to confirm that for you. Top power play units as of today: Cody Glass, Ryan O'Reilly, Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi, Tyson Barrie, and Nyquist on the second power play there. He was still on the top line with Forsberg and O'Reilly, but he was bumped off the top power play. Ricky's in here saying he got bumped off the top power play. Yep, that's what happened there. That's the reason for any drops in Nyquist roster ship that you might be seeing. Let's keep rolling. Talk about Matt Zuccarello. 4 assists his last 5 games, skating almost 20 minutes a night. So obviously that is pretty solid stuff. Definitely rosterable stuff. I haven't actually checked to see. Oh yeah, the Wild are playing the 10 o'clock game. So that game hasn't started yet. Don't have any true updates from that game yet, but I think, I don't know. I kind of feel like Zuccarello is who he is. Definitely, they've played around with the lines a little bit more this year, and that's not ideal for Zuccarello if he's not getting that Kaprizov exposure all the time. And they have, yeah, in the most recent games, they have been moving away. They've tried the Boldy up there with Joel Eriksson Ek and Kirill Kaprizov at even strength. Obviously, Zuccarello is still on the top power play. But yeah, that does just give him a little bit more downside, right, than we've typically seen. And Zuccarello has never been one to show up in the advanced metrics, but it's been really bad the last little bit. 322nd in shots per 60, 331st in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. Still up there at 65th in Corsi, 4 per 60, but the on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60 at 145th. Nothing to write home about. On the season now, pacing for just 16 goals, but 76 points still. And I kind of feel like the 76 points is probably the ceiling, right? And for most of the season, he's been there with Kaprizov. Kaprizov hasn't actually played at his best all season, so maybe there's a reasonable expectation that Kaprizov could outperform rest of season. And if Zuccarello gets on the top line rest of season, as has been the most common pairing of wingers on the top line, then there could be some upside, I guess. I could see that scenario. Definitely the 7.8% shooting percentage on the season resulting in those 16 goals, that's low, even for Zuccarello. So I do think that he gets some kind of bounce back there, but probably only to like a 20 to 25 goal pace rest of season. Yeah, I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic on Zuccarello, I would say, rest of season. But definitely he's got downside now that he's no longer a fixture alongside Kaprizov at even strength. So you have to factor that in as well. Jurij Slafkovský, the latest rage, 4 goals, 6 points in his last 5 games here, just over 17 minutes average time on ice, 95th in shots per 60. That's one of the better marks that he's posted in quite some time, and 34th in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60, also a really good mark. He's been getting top line, top power play usage on the season, still on pace for just 16 goals, 38 points. So he's still got a long way to go in terms of the season-long stats. But overall, it does seem like Slafkovský could be turning a corner here. Again, I'm moderately excited, I'd say, for Slafkovský. I talked about it in the waiver wire show, but named a few names, players rostered under 10%. Slafkovský just kind of fits a profile of these guys. there's always a few guys from these teams that are out of the playoff race early. Everybody knows it. Everybody kind of stops paying attention to them for fantasy purposes. And there's always a guy or two that emerge from these low ranking teams in the NHL that nobody's paying attention to. But you look back at the end of the season, you're like, hey, for the last like 30 games of the season, this guy just went off. He had like 30 points in the last 30 games. Wow, nobody even was really talking about it. That might not happen with Slafkovský because he's obviously high profile, first overall pick, plays in Montreal. But definitely, I think he fits that profile of a guy who could end up just getting all the minutes if he's playing well. Like, it wouldn't shock me if they played him like 20 minutes a game just to kind of see if he can handle it through the back half of the season, if that's kind of all they have to play for. And yeah, if he continues to play at this level, he'll definitely produce some decent numbers. I don't think he's gonna, you know, the last five games, obviously, to get the 4 goals in 5 games, he's shooting 31%. That's not going to continue, but I can definitely see him putting up, like, yeah, he could put up a 70-point pace rest of the season. That's well within the range of outcomes for a guy like this, who could potentially get up into that, you know, 19 plus minute range for the rest of the season, because Montreal really doesn't have much to play for, and they really do want to see what they have in Slafkovský and give him every chance to improve his game and continue to be a major piece for them moving forward. So I am optimistic on Slafkovský. I mean, if this took a turn for the worse next week and he went, you know, 3 straight games without a shot and without any points, then I'd just kick him to the curb right away. I wouldn't. It's not like I'm saying this is a guy that I'm totally sold on, he's going to be awesome the rest of the year. No, I'm just optimistic based on what I'm seeing. If it fits with my team, if it fits with the scheduling, if he is the best option out there currently, then I'm definitely interested in rostering him and just seeing where it goes from this point onwards. We have, I'm a 2020 president candidate. Nate the Goat back at it again. Thank you, good friend. Dirty Deed 5, ready to be unpuzzled. Got to drop one, though. Meyer versus D. Strome. It's an interesting one. Strome has been playing pretty well as of late. Let's pop them both in the sheet here, and we can kind of compare side by side. Dylan Strome, last 5 games, 5 points, 36th in shots per 60, 24th in on-ice Corsi 4 per 60. Those are good numbers for sure. Timo Meyer has quite publicly not had a very good stretch in, or season rather, and the last stretch is no better. Just 1 assist his last 5, 198th in shots per 60, 289th in Corsi 4 per 60. Yeah, that's just pretty wild for Timo Meyer on the season. Now pacing for just 20 goals, 42 points. Yeah, it's really tough to see a major upside for Meyer at the moment. Like, I've told some people, you know, patrons that are asking like for permission to drop Meyer, that they can definitely do so. I just don't see any signs of it getting better at this point. I believe in the talent of the player. I believe the player's talented enough for things to turn around. I kind of have to believe maybe there's an injury at play here. Something along those lines has to be at play for this to be as bad as it has been for so long. But whatever the reason, for fantasy purposes, I just don't think that it's going all that well, and I definitely think you can move away from it. In this game that's going on right now against the Kraken, he's playing with Curtis Lazar and Dawson Mercer, and he has picked up an assist, so good for him on that. But yeah, I cannot say that I'm super excited about Meyer, so I think I would honestly take Dylan Strome at this point. Amon says, Luke Hughes just hit the waiver, 14-team points league. Should I drop Ghost and try to get him? Luke Hughes, I mean, he's got a solid schedule this week, so you can definitely do it just for that. Obviously, you're not getting the game that's going on currently if you're going to add Hughes now, but he's got 3 more games still this week, so that's all right. Dropping Ghost to spare. Let's throw in both these guys for a moment. We did talk about Luke Hughes. I kind of feel like he's just a strong streamer at this point. Shane Goss to spare, we can put aside in the sheet here. He hasn't been doing much as of late either. Underlying numbers, not too fantastic, but he is outpacing Luke Hughes pretty comfortably on the season. Luke Hughes just has the benefit, obviously, of playing on a team that should score a lot of points and should score points on the power play, where he's still quarterbacking that. So you do think that he should have, yeah, just a good exposure there. It's very close for me. I would say I'm pretty ambivalent between the two. They're kind of just both on that fringe in points league. Both should probably be rostered. Luke Hughes getting more minutes at the moment, just with all the injuries they have there. That might sway me towards Luke Hughes just a little bit because it feels like his role is a little bit more insulated. Goss Despair is traded top power play with Moritz Seider. They've even tried other things with that power play. So I think I would take Hughes over Ghost of Spear at this point. Jordan in the chat. Hey, Nate, what are your thoughts on Decord rest of season? How would you rank him compared to Ersin and Riddick? Wins are worth 5. Goals against minus 3. Saves 0.5. Shutouts 5. Yeah, it is an interesting question between Decord and Ersin in particular. I tend to disbelieve in Rittich, just because he's been so bad for so long. It's hard to imagine that what he's doing right now is anything more than just a hot streak that could end at any moment. Ersin has had a really good stretch, I kind of believe, in Philadelphia, continuing to be halfway decent the rest of the season. Not that Seattle can't be or that Decord can't be, but yeah, I honestly think they're very, very similar. I don't have a strong take between Decord and Ersin. I think maybe Ersin might have a little more insulation in that I don't see anyone coming for that job. So even if he doesn't play great for stretches, he'll probably come right back into that job. Honestly, he basically already did that. The first 3 games after Carter Hart left the team, Ersin did not play very well, or at least there were a bunch of goals scored on him. And they just kind of went right back to him, and he seems to have turned things around. So I kind of feel like he has a little bit more insulation in that regard. Whereas Decord, you obviously have Grubauer there. And if Decord falters, they're still paying to Grubauer a ton of money. So I feel like they would try him out and try to turn it into a bit more of a tandem. So maybe that's a reason to lean Ersin, but I honestly don't have a strong take between Decord and Ersin rest of season. I would take both of them over Rittich just because I find it really hard to believe that after all this time and almost being out of the league in the last year, that he's suddenly just terrific. So anyway, that's my take there. Aman says best consistent fantasy content on all platforms. Appreciate you, my good sir. Coop is in the chat. Love the show, Nate. Who do you like better, Ryan Gosling or Ryan Reynolds? I don't know if I can be forced to choose between my favorite Ryans in this way. But I have to take, I think I have to take Ryan Reynolds as the Canadian, as the guy married to my first celebrity crush in Blake Lively. Yeah, I think I have to go with Ryan Reynolds. Mike Rad is in here. Hey, I have the Professor, Mike Matheson, Zach Werenski, Yossi, Brock Faber, and Evan Bouchard. Would Chychrun be an upgrade on any one of those? That's an interesting one for sure. Faber was actually brought up as a player to talk about, so we could talk about Faber. He's been producing. Yeah, that's actually really tough. You have a really strong defense core there, and I don't feel that he's necessarily an upgrade. Like, he very well could outperform one or more of those players rest of season, but I don't feel like you need to give up something to go get Chychrun for him to be that upgrade, if that makes sense. You're mentioning also that it's for the playoffs. So, yeah, I think it's not a necessarily a big upgrade in my opinion, and I don't think that it's probably not worth it. Whatever you have to do to go out and get him, I don't think it's worth it in terms of it being an upgrade. Is it time to hop off the Vilardi party over there in Winnipeg? Yeah, we talked about Vilardi, Blake and I did, and yeah, he's been moved around, moved down the lineup, off the top line. Still on the top power play, but the underlying stats have really fallen off in a big way for Gabe Vilardi, and that's what's the most concerning. And so I do think you can move off of Vilardi if you have, you know, if he's kind of the odd man out this week, if he's not getting into your lineup on the heavy nights here and you want to move off and get somebody else in, I think you're totally fine to move off Vilardi at the moment. I do think that there's a solid player here at times. Maybe he's just one of these guys who goes hot and cold in some way, but if Bonus is already moving him down the lineup, then yeah, it's probably time to be pretty vigilant in terms of hopping off. Oh, Aman is providing a correction. Gosling is Canadian too. Apparently I didn't even know that. So I can't use that as a distinguishing factor, but I guess I'll stick with my previous take. I'll stick with Ryan Reynolds over Ryan Gosling. All right, so let's talk about Brock Faber. He was the next up here. 4 points in his last five, including a goal, skating 27 minutes a night. Absolute yeoman's work Brock Faber's doing in his rookie season. Really impressive stuff, obviously, from the young defenseman. 101st in shots per 60, 139th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. So he's definitely not exactly firing pucks on net with abandon. 82nd in Corsi, 4 per 60, 61st in scoring chances, 4 per 60. Those aren't great numbers, really. Faber is just doing it with volume, and I kind of believe that it's a little bit sustainable just because the volume is so high. Now on pace for 6 goals, 50 points on the season. Yeah, as long as he's getting top power play and skating ridiculous amount of minutes, I just don't see a scenario in which he's not gonna be at this kind of 50-point pace. That's kind of where I see him rest of season. He could move into a few more goals and a few less assists. That wouldn't surprise me too much, but overall, I kind of feel like this is where he might be. I don't think there's a big ceiling beyond this unless he, you know, takes a big step in terms of the underlying numbers, which would be pretty surprising for a rookie to do that late in his rookie season. If anything, you'd feel like it's more likely that he might fall off a little bit in the back end of the season, you know, as the wear and tear of an NHL season gets to him a little bit more. But overall, I'm pretty happy with Brock Faber. I don't have a strong reason to move off him. If the minutes start to slip, that's what I'm really watching for with Brock Faber as kind of like a leading indicator of when the point production, the fantasy production might start to drop off. Mon asking, do you think Huberdeau will bounce back now that he's with Cousy? We talked about Huberdeau, Blake and I did, along with Kadri, in the last episode, the flagship show yesterday. So you can go check that one out. But basically, our thesis was Huberdeau has gotten into some points recently, but it's honestly not that there's not a big underlying number push. It's not like things have really improved under the hood. And yeah, overall, I'm just not that excited about Huberdeau. Like, he's at the point now for me where he's gonna have to prove himself over a much longer stretch of time before I'm really starting to buy back in. It's just really tough to buy back in on Huberdeau. Can you stream him? You know, when Calgary's got a good schedule, absolutely. You can absolutely do that. I mean, they're paying the man. He's gonna get lots of power play time. The minutes haven't been spectacular though, like more around the 17-minute mark. It's not like he's skating 20 minutes a night and just voluming his way into some points that way. So yeah, you're not getting that benefit, but I do think Huberdeau right now exists comfortably as like a streamer level player. Thoughts on Morgan Rielly's suspension? How many games do I figure? Honestly, like, they gave him an in-person hearing, which is just to give themselves the option of 6+ game suspension. There's threads going around on Twitter. I'm obviously a little bit on Leafs Twitter as well, and so there's threads going around Leafs Twitter of people posting all the cross checks to the head that have only gotten like one game suspensions or like fines. So I don't know. If they're going to be consistent with what they've done in the past, it definitely should not be even close to 5 games, in my opinion. But because there is such an instant microscope around this, because it's the Leafs, everything is magnified, and who knows what George Parros and the DOPS is going to do. Like, if you know, yeah, I'd like to get you to call the lottery numbers for me because it is absolutely wild the kind of suspensions that they roll out and seems to have no rhyme or reason. No previous plays come into their justification. They don't have like a, you know, this kind of act equals this amount of suspension. They just roll the dice every time, and that's what they go with. So, yeah, I honestly don't have a good idea of that, but in his absence, it looked like Jake McCabe was up on the top power play. Blake and I had theorized that it might be Timothy Liljegren because he's been running the second power play unit. But Liljegren has really not been a favorite of Sheldon Keefe as of late. And now we're seeing even more of that as Jake McCabe gets elevated to the top power play ahead of him. So it will be interesting to see if McCabe can do anything with that. I mean, McCabe provides peripherally, and realistically, all he needs to do is distribute at the top there. He's not going to create the same way that Riley can, but I do think that, you know, McCabe could definitely run into a point or two here or there. Matthew asking, any information on a return to the net for Anderson in Carolina, and has T. Thompson shown any signs of a return to productivity? I honestly haven't checked on Anderson in a while. There's been some reports that he was getting close. And then I heard some other people talking about, oh, he's not really close. He's just, he's just getting closer. And so I don't know. I really wish that I had better information on Frederik Andersen. I think, honestly, like, I'm not convinced that Frederik Andersen is, like, the necessary starter when he comes back at this point. He's 34 years old. He hasn't been good. He's been on the ice, but I don't know if that means that he's actually, you know, I don't know that that means he's actually gonna play anytime soon. So, like, take that for what it's worth. Obviously, it's not much of a take, but I do think Khachkov has shown well enough that they're probably gonna, like, at least I would suggest that it could be a 1A Khachkov situation. I'm not convinced that Frederik Andersen has any fantasy value rest of season, and I'm just kind of ambivalent about him returning, to be quite honest. Coop says hockey needs stricter injury reporting rules like the NFL. Yeah, lower body injury. I've been saying this. This is something, like, especially if you want to be, they're constantly trying to appeal to betting and sports betting, and you see the commercials for it all the time, and yet they don't want to force teams to actually give, you know, real injury information. That doesn't make any sense to me. The NHL is in some ways a very unserious league, as many have said before me. Anyway, let's keep rolling. Let's talk about Shane Pinto, who's got 2 goals, 5 points in his last five, averaging just under 18 minutes a night, and it has been going up. I believe it was the last game against the Leafs here that he was over 20 minutes, if I remember correctly. I'm going to fact check myself on this real quick, but Shane Pinto, 20 minutes, 14 seconds in the last game. He's got these 5 points have all come in the last two games. He's got 9 shots in those two games. He's got 3 hits, couple blocks. He's been doing everything. So I'm actually pretty interested in Shane Pinto at the moment. You can see the underlying metrics look good through the last five games. 24th in shots per 60, 14th in individual scoring chances 4 per 60, 48th in Corsi 4 per 60, 32nd in scoring chances 4 per 60. I picked up Pinto in a spot this week where I could actually fit him into my lineup. And I'm pretty interested just to see where it goes. They kind of have some need to figure out what they're doing in Ottawa. So it's not like anything set in stone there. And if somebody's performing well, they're just going to play them, I think. So that's kind of the bull case there for Pinto. Obviously, they've been moving stuff around. In the last game, it was Pinto with Tarasenko and Grieg, but they actually gave that line the most even strength time on ice. And Pinto has been playing on the top power play with Drew, Tkachuk, and Norris. So, yeah, all those things together, I'm pretty interested in Pinto at the moment. I'm definitely not, like, saying that he's going to be the best guy for the rest of the season, but similar to Slavkovsky, like, if you pinned me down and asked me Slavkovsky or Pinto rest of season, that'd be pretty tough. Pinto's playing better than Slavkovsky at the moment, but Slavkovsky actually, you know, probably has a little bit more of a cemented role in the top six at the very least, if not the top line, top power play there in Montreal. So maybe you want to play it safe with Slavkovsky, but I actually think the ceiling might be a little bit higher with Pinto. So interesting spot, for sure. And I'm willing to, if you've got the room, if Pinto's going to get into games for you this week, then I definitely don't hate picking him up, seeing how he does. And then, if it falls off, it falls off, and you've only wasted one ad on it. It's not the end of the world. But if he continues to play this way, then yeah, you could see him continue to get big minutes for an Ottawa team that just needs someone to be producing, someone to get hot. So, I'm about it. I'm into Shane Pinto at the moment. Mike Matheson is next up. He's got 7 assists in his last 5 games, skating 27 minutes a night, getting the Brock Faber treatment over there. Is Mike Matheson the professor? 60th in shots per 60, 26th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60 amongst all defensemen in this stretch, 126th in Corsi, 4 per 60. That's not great. 51st in scoring chances, 4 per 60, a little bit better. Matheson now on pace for 11 goals, 61 points on the season. Really interesting season that he's put together. 58% IPP is like an elite defenseman level IPP, but you kind of believe it a little bit more in Montreal, right? Because Montreal, like the offense goes through Nick Suzuki, it goes through Cole Caulfield, it goes through Mike Matheson. Those are the guys driving the bus in Montreal for sure, and pretty much nobody else is doing it. So I'm actually like not shocked at that 58% IPP, and I think it might be semi-sustainable. This is probably the high end of where Matheson could live at the 61-point pace mark. Most likely he's ends the season somewhere around 55, but I mean 55, 60, are you really, I really splitting hairs at that point. He's having a terrific season. I don't really see a reason for it to fall off in any way, and I think you're probably just riding with it if you've got Mike Matheson anywhere. Josh in the chat. Hey, Nate, I need some help. Started the year not knowing a thing about hockey or fantasy hockey, but thanks to your help, I'm tied for first and addicted. Awesome stuff. Do I play for first in the bye? Should I start trading for better playoff players and stream for the week to keep winning? Lastly, do you see any holes in my team? Oh, he's got a whole bunch of stuff here. So, what I would say is, yeah, I've gone through kind of my, I forget the word, heuristic. I've gone through my heuristic for playoff priming, right? Playoff strategizing, whatever you want to call it. Basically, getting the bye should be your primary in this situation. Getting the bye should definitely be your primary objective. Making the playoffs is obviously first on everybody's mind. If you're in a position to, then trying to get the bye should be the second priority once you're established in the playoff hunt and you're going for one of those top seeds to get the bye. That's the best way to, that gives yourself the best chance of winning the league by far. Getting a bye is the number one thing you can do to help yourself win a league. So that should be your primary focus for sure. And then the third thing you should be looking at is trading for players that give you better playoff schedules, basically. So that's what I'd look at in that order. So definitely keep playing hard, keep playing for the bye. But if you do have opportunities to make even like lateral moves, right? Like if you're looking at two players and you figure they're about the same level of player, but one has a better playoff schedule on another team, and you can go get that player for a player that you consider to be roughly equal on your team right now, that's definitely a move that you could be looking at making at this point. So definitely don't shy away from that, and definitely be on the lookout for stuff like that. But I would say that your primary focus should be playing for that bye at the moment. Jackson's also in here. What's up, Nate? Hyped to be in this chat. Hashtag let's get to biz. You love to see it. He's got a question. Hyman versus Brat as a keeper in a keep four league with goals, assists, points, power play points, shots on goals, hits, and blocks. Whose numbers are the most surprising slash sustainable? It is interesting, actually. I do kind of enjoy talking about these two in particular because it's very interesting what these guys are doing. I talked about Jesper Bratt as a low-key star. I think what he's been able to do this year, even with Hughes being out of the lineup, a 90-point pace, Jesper Bratt is on the season. And I think it's legit. Like the underlying stats on the season are all terrific. He's not actually performing at the best in terms of the underlying stats right now, but he's still got 3 goals, 7 points in his last 5. So clearly it's not hurting him too much. Zach Hyman's got 3 goals, no assists in his last 5, skating over 20 minutes a night, as he's wont to do. 12th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, up there in Corsi, 4 per 60, and on ice scoring chances, 4 per 60, pacing for 54 goals, 84 points is Zach Hyman. I do think the goals come down, but yeah, point per game, Zach Hyman. I think that's kind of the world we live in right now, just given his constant exposure to Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and the top power play and all of that. So I do think that point per game Hyman is here to stay. I think Bratt could even honestly even have some ceiling beyond the 90 point pace if he, you know, if he plays with Hughes rest of season and they get on a hot streak. Like, there could be some really interesting stuff going on. At the moment, Brad is playing with Heischer and Palat, so he's not actually getting that even strength. Jack Hughes exposure, still in the top power play unit, obviously. Overall, given the categories that you have as well, you know, Hyman's going to give you a little bit more in the hits. He's probably giving you a bit more in the shots. Yeah, it'll be a little bit more in the shots for sure. Power play points, they're probably roughly similar. I'd have to go in and check their power play numbers. It's an interesting one for sure. I think they are fairly similar. I think you're right to be kind of comparing these players. I think that Hyman is probably going to fall off on the goals, but he's probably going to supplement that with a few more assists here or there. I mean, in the end, I think that I would take Hyman by a nose between these two, just because of the all-around, like, all-category coverage from Hyman. I think I would take him there, but it's very, very close, and both are terrific players for sure. Aldwin, hi, I just tuned in. Can you talk Logan Thompson, please? Seems Hill is the guy. Yeah, I mean, basically, this is why I didn't really want any part of the Vegas tandem at the start of the season. I was just not sure that we were going to see. Yeah, I wasn't sure what we were going to see, to be quite honest with you. Logan Thompson had played terrific the year before, but yeah, Aiden Hill has gotten, he's going to be starting the Minnesota game tonight, so we'll see how that goes. Obviously, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, then you already know how that went. Maybe still Hill stunk to join up, and everybody's talking about Thompson as the next highest guy. Maybe that's the scenario, but he's been terrific and is getting his third straight start here. Yeah, I think Logan Thompson should not be rostered right now. I think you're snoozing if you're hanging on to Logan Thompson at the moment. Definitely think you can drop him right now. All right, I do want to make sure that we get to a few more players here. Sam Bennett was one that was highly requested, and he's got just one assist in his 5 games here. 16 minutes average time on ice. Curiously, the shots per 60 have kind of gone off the cliff here. Typically, that's something that Sam Bennett does very well, but 200th in shots per 60 over the last 5. There's still 30th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, so that's still been there. Second in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60, so that's still been there. On the season, Sam Bennett's pacing for 22 goals, 47 points, and 51% IPP, 12% shooting percentage, 10% on-ice shooting percentage. All of that feels not that crazy to me. Maybe the on-ice shooting percentage could be a little bit higher for Sam Bennett, and he could factor into a little bit more that way. But I think like 25 goal, 50 point Sam Bennett is what you're expecting, but you're also kind of expecting him to provide you a ton of hits and shots and everything around it. So Sam Bennett at the moment, not playing his best for sure, but I'm not like concerned overall on Sam Bennett, I guess is what I would say. I do think that he's definitely going to come back from this and have another good week. You know, Blake had him as a streamer not that long ago in our head-to-head streamer deathmatch, and he had a terrific week that week. So I do think that there's every chance, honestly, that he turns things around and comes right back. And yeah, basically him and Matthew Tkachuk, those two guys everybody loves to hate on that line, right? I do think that he comes back and he's pretty terrific once again for fantasy purposes, on obviously. I don't think you're expecting Sam Bennett to be like a 70-point guy, but I do think that easily he's a 50-point guy with some upside if he ever got on a big-time hot streak and rode that for a while. Just kind of rolling through the other players that were requested. I want to make sure that we talk about some of the more interesting ones for sure. And I think the one that I do need to bring up, I think the one that I do need to bring up is Elias Lindholm. So Elias Lindholm obviously traded to the Canucks, a new situation there. And So far, it's been all right. In his last five games, he's actually got six games played because of the trade to the Canucks and the way that Natural Stat Trick pulls that data, which is kind of funny. But yeah, he's been producing. He's been getting great deployment, like 21, 22, and then 19, 26 in the last two games. So he's been getting deployment, three shots in both of those, even through three hits in one of those games, has three blocks across those two games. So the last couple of games here have been really solid for Lindholm. I kind of feel like this is an ideal setup for him. I think he's got 70 to 80 point potential as a pace rest of season from here on out, especially if he can continue to hang on to top power play usage as long as he's associated, you know, as long as he's getting that Pettersson exposure. That's what we really want to see in a lot of these cases. Actually, in the last game, he was playing with JT Miller and Brock Besser, which is just fine by me. Definitely, I'm okay with him getting that kind of play as well. JT Miller, Brock Besser, Elias Pettersson, as long as he's playing with one or two of those guys, I'm going to be happy with Elias Lindholm. I do think that, you know, the underlying stats, especially even as he gets more acclimated, I think they'll come back up. It was pretty clear that he was done in Calgary in my mind. Yeah, it seemed like he had given up a little bit, was still putting up some points just because he's a talented player, but a 17-goal, 53-point pace, I think he's probably much more likely to score at like a 70-plus point pace from here on out. So I do think Lindholm makes for a pretty interesting buy. A lot of leagues out there, Vancouver actually has a really advantageous power play or playoff schedule, rather. And so I do think that Lindholm is somebody that you should be interested in for all of those reasons. I'm just going to do one more scroll through and make sure that there's nobody higher ranked. Tim Stützle was actually brought up here, and Brandon Montour. So those are two that I think we'll end on here for today. Let me grab Tim Stützle because of Tim Stützle having, I believe that's called the umlaut, is the accent in his name. Somebody can correct me on that if I'm wrong on that, but because of that, I have to write it in with that accent into the sheet. Otherwise, it doesn't pull from Natural Stat Trick because obviously they have that written in his name in their site. So Stützle, 3 points in his last five, skating 20 minutes a night still. Underlying numbers not great. 231st in shots per 60, 156th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 99th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 157th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. Yeah, it's not what we're used to, right? From Mr. Stützle. And in the practice today, he was skating with Matthew Joseph and Claude Giroux. I mean, it could be worse, but it definitely could be better as well. And as I mentioned, he hasn't been on the top power play, which is kind of the most concerning part of that. In the last game, I believe I mentioned it was Norris, Pinto, Tkachuk, and then I believe it was Giroux was the fourth forward on the power play. Just double checking. Yep, that's what it was. And so Stützle playing on the second unit with like Tarasenko and Batherson. It's obviously not as good of a situation for him to be in. Still on a 19-goal, 80-point pace on the season, but actually these 20-minute average time on ice is down from his season average of over 21 minutes. And yeah, the underlying metrics have not been good for Stützle all season. He's never been like a guy who absolutely crushes in terms of, you know, generating shots and scoring chances for, but he's definitely been better before. 70% IPP, 8.4% shooting percentage is low, but I'm not convinced that Stützle is like a super high converter in shooting percentage to begin with. So it might come up, but it might not come up to an extreme amount. And the on-ice shooting percentage at 10.3%. Feels in the range. So overall, I think that Stützle probably is this player, but while he's getting this reduced deployment, I am actually a little bit concerned. Like, he's probably more of like, honestly, like a 65 to 70 point player in his current deployment. I think he probably at some point gets back to more deployment, or better deployment, like still getting 20 minutes a night. Obviously, that's definitely good deployment. But better deployment with better players is probably something that happens. You know, Shane Pinto may fall off and Stützle, you know, takes back some of that work. So I think that probably comes back. But yeah, I think that maybe you have to adjust your expectations just a little bit on Tim Stützle, at least for the immediate future here. Brandon Montour, one assist in his last five games. I've said this in a few different places, but yeah. Brandon Montour, this is one of the worst cold streaks that I've ever seen playing fantasy hockey and paying attention pretty closely to player stats. This is one of the worst cold streaks for an elite level player, and I do believe he is an elite level player that I've ever seen. A 25-point pace through 36 games played on the season for Montour. I do think that there is something to the fact that he came back late and was coming back from the shoulder injury. I don't know that that's really affecting him because his underlying metrics are spectacular. 13th in shots per 60 on the season, 8th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 1st in on-ice Corsi 4 per 60, 4th in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60 while skating 23-plus minutes a night. Really, the role hasn't changed for Brandon Montour, and the underlying stats have not changed either. Like, even in this last 5 games, that's very similar to his season-long stats. I fully believe that the breakout is still going to come for Brandon Montour. He's going to at some point here, these pucks are going to go in for Brandon Montour, and you're going to be happy that you held on. It's really unfortunate that it's taken this long, obviously, and you've been kind of taking a beating hanging on to Montour, but I am, there's not a question in my mind that I'm hanging on to Brandon Montour everywhere I've got him. I think his upside is top 5 fantasy defenseman rest of season, and I just can't drop a player like that. I absolutely refuse to do so. So that's my take on Montour, and I would go out and get him. You know, if somebody's thinking about, like, players in your league who have Montour probably thinking about dropping him, to be quite honest with you. If somebody dropped Montour in my league, I would go out and drop all of my fab on him for the rest of the season, and I wouldn't think twice about it. So that's as strong a case as I can make for Brandon Montour, and that feels like a good spot to let things go for today. Thanks to everybody who joined today. Love having these chats with you all, but that's all I've got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value, helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, a terrific free resource. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for the podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. That's it, folks. Much love.